Time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Socha.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in Connecting the Diocese. Did you happen to hear about the American tourist in Italy who was visiting the volcano, Mount Vesuvius, and there were these big signs up that said, don't go this way, don't go on this path, it is dangerous, don't go here. So what, of course, did he do? He went on that path, and he slipped and fell into the volcano. Now, the volcano has not been active since 1944, so he was not a crispy critter, and he had some scrapes and bruises, and now, of course, he's facing charges in Italy. Now, of course, I'm happy that he's okay, but it did occur to me that somewhere down the road, he's going to be applying for a job, and they're going to say, have you ever been convicted of anything? And he's going to say, well, yeah, once in Italy. And they're going to say, what was it? He says, well, it's like this. I ignored a bunch of safety things on a sign, and I fell into a volcano, Mount Vesuvius. And they'll say, yeah, okay, we'll get back to you. Coming up in just a bit, Bishop Callahan talks about some other advice that people sometimes ignore. Back after this. And Bishop Callahan will be with us in just a moment. Quick question. Did you ever see one of these people makeover photos? You know, they take a man or a woman and they cut their hair really nice. And in some cases, they use makeup. And then they find the right kind of clothes that matches their complexion and their eyes. And they find a photographer who takes a nice picture of them. And then you see the picture, the before and the after. And you say, wow, I didn't even recognize you in that second picture. Well, COVID-19 has had a makeover. It's called BA5, and that makeover is attractive if you're a virus because it's managed to find its way around some of the defenses, not all of them, that are provided by either getting the vaccine with boosters or getting the much less effective natural immunity from having had COVID. This does not mean that you should not get the vaccine. As a matter of fact, at this time, virtually 100% of the people who ended up hospitalized because of this BA5 all were unvaccinated. People who have been vaccinated and boosted are not getting as serious a reaction to the virus, but it's getting around things. So what they're suggesting, of course, is number one, if you haven't gotten the vaccine or you haven't gotten the boosters, get them. There should be a new variant defense shot sometime in this fall. It is not ready yet. Do not skip getting the booster now thinking you're going to get the shot in the fall. You should get both of them. And remember that just because we're focusing on BA5 now, it doesn't mean that the other variants have gone away. The original ones are still floating around looking to get into people. So it's very important that you get the vaccine. We're kind of playing whack-a-mole, and that's just the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future. Yeah, the virus hasn't gone away, so don't forget about wearing a mask in crowded, unventilated areas and hand washing and using hand sanitizer. And keep yourself safe because it's happening this summer. It's probably going to get a little bit worse as people move indoors this fall. So be smart and be safe. Well, as promised, the Bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse, Bishop William P. Callahan, has joined us for this particular episode, the whole hour, which is really nice because I know, Bishop, how very, very busy you are. Welcome to your show and welcome to the show I enjoy hosting.
Thank you so much, Jack. I enjoy being with you and with everyone, all of the folks who are joining us on the broadcast.
Looking for different shows each week and at the same time keeping an eye on the news and what's going on in the world. People are really, really upset for all kinds of different reasons and all different ways of expressing it. And people are looking for answers while at the same time they are kind of disregarding things that they have grown up with. Somebody said that if you lose trust in institutions, whether they be secular or religious, if you lose trust in institutions, you don't listen to what they say. And a lot of people just walk away from their churches. They walk away from the responsibilities of being in a democratic republic, all kinds of things. And they then don't listen to what was said that caused these things to be so valuable to begin with. So I thought for our benefit and my benefit, we would look at some of the things that you hear in church constantly that maybe, what was there, some product they came out with, they were trying to reintroduce it. It was like called Discover It Again for the First Time. And I don't know whether that was orange juice or what, but I want to do that with the Ten Commandments. Without confusing anybody, I've got notes here. The Bible actually contains two complete sets of the Ten Commandments, one in Exodus, one in Deuteronomy. Leviticus has a partial set. And again, in Exodus, there's another kind of a version, sometimes considered a ritual decalogue, which is something for another day. But we're going to stick with the abbreviated Catholic Ten commandments. So what I'd like to do is briefly read these, and then we can pick them apart one after another. Okay?
Certainly.
So here we go. Number one, I, the Lord, am your God. You shall have no other gods beside me. Number two, you shall not take the name of the Lord God in vain. Number three, remember to keep holy the Lord's day. Number four, honor your father and mother. Number five, you shall not kill. Number six, you shall not commit adultery. Number seven, you shall not steal. Number eight, you shall not bear false witness. Number nine, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. And number 10, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. Really short and to the point, and there's so much hidden in each one of them. Bishop, you want to take number one? I, the Lord, am your God. You shall not have other gods beside me.
That is the very basic premise of everything. I am the Lord, your God. You shall have no other gods besides me. And that kind of sets it all up so that we understand that God comes first. Jesus uses that when the teachers try to foul him up and say, to whom shall we pay tax? And Jesus says, whose image is on it? Whose name? Caesar's name. And then Jesus says, render to Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto God that which is God's. Now, the whole point of that response is very, very clear and very, very deep, because everything belongs to God. And that first commandment makes that very clear. That I am the Lord your God, you shall have no strange gods before me. No gods other than me. That whole idea is founded, and it is the basis of the scriptures. The basis of all of God's communication to man.
Sometimes people may read that or hear this, and they say, well, I don't believe in Azul or... but also, there are other gods with a small g that people tend to worship, even though they are not technically gods.
That's right.
They could be just video gaming.
Right.
They could be reading inopportune in pornography.
Money.
Money, my goodness. And Jesus talks about that specifically, yes.
Sure.
And the Pope called it the dung of the devil.
There it is.
So when you think about not having any gods before you, it's kind of like, what are the things that are impediments to you thinking more about the kind of stuff we're talking about right now?
That's the whole point. You know, when you stop and think, you really do come up with some beautiful facts about our relationship with God, and then it just breaks down. Probably one of the best ways to look at all this is the fact that the first three of the commandments all deal with man's relationship to God and God's relationship to man. Then the rest of the commandments, the other seven, are all clearly man's relationship to God in terms of how he is supposed to react, respond, and carry on his life in relationship to one another, but by virtue of what God intends. So the first three deal with God, the second seven deal with relationship to God.
The second one, you shall not take the name of the Lord in vain. The first thing that comes to mind, of course, is swearing.
And yes. And you go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, I'm just kind of thinking about, I look at online versions of national newspapers, and whenever something comes up about religion or the Pope or Catholics, heaven forbid, there's always these people who go, well, you know, if you want to believe that that fairy man in the sky, it's up to you. Basically, what they're doing is they're taking the name of God in vain. They are dismissing God. They're saying, it's not important. It's not important that you believe in it. I don't believe in any ultimate reality just because you do, and you're all stupid. And, you know, it's the same as swearing.
That's right. And the idea is not just swearing. The idea is swearing an oath. That's really what that intends, that I swear to God. And that is where when you put your hand on the Bible and you say, so help me God. And those sorts of things, that is the place where you are perjuring yourself. And that whole sense of perjury is contrary to the second commandment.
Yeah, and also we talk about in Jesus' name. Again, it's very difficult if a person was out there trying to understand what a person of a particular faith was all about. You can't approach it by first totally dismissing everything that person believes as being stupid. You're not going to get anywhere. And also, some of these people who complain the most about this stuff, you know, oh yeah, the ferryman in the sky, I really think that they're the ones who are really kind of crying out and searching the most. They may not want to admit that. But it's impossible to try to approach understanding God if you just suddenly walk up and throw a pie in his face.
Yeah. And that's so true. And you want to try and find a way without being contrary to God. You're not going to offend God. And I'm using, you know, that in air quotes. You're not going to offend God by saying something that is exactly right. You know, you're going to throw a pie in his face and you're going to say, oh, well, it doesn't matter anyway because you're not there. Or this doesn't matter because I don't believe in you. And that somehow your opinion negates God's activity, God's being. And it does say something a little bit, let's just say, sketchy about your relationship to God.
There's a great word I learned somewhere, probably in college years ago, anthropomorphic.
Yes.
Which is trying to give God, who's pretty much, you know, we have a hard time describing, human traits.
Yes.
And also, many of these criticisms that you see online where people are complaining about it are unbelievably anthropomorphic.
And that's that beautiful Greek language of ours coming so close to us, anthropomorphic. We are saying things that make God equal to us. And who was it that said, God created man, and man, being a gentleman, returned the favor.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I've forgotten his name.
You know, speaking of that, if any of you have any questions or comments on these things, just drop us an email sometime at connecting@diolc.org. We're always happy to hear from you. And sometimes we have these kinds of shows, other times more nuts and bolts kind of things. But some of the shows that have had the deepest impact have been, for example, our bishop talking about how you start a prayer life. And occasionally, very rarely, we repeat part of a show. And that's when we repeat. We stuck that one away. This may be one of them, too. Because not everybody's listening every single time.
And it's hard, to keep focused.
Speaking of keeping focused, number three, remember to keep holy the Lord's Day. First question, gee, Bishop, what's the Lord's Day?
At the time of the commandments, it was the Sabbath. And Sabbath, the word itself, means Saturday, the seventh day. That was the day upon which the Lord rested from his creation. And so we have taken it into the Christian understanding and our own sense of what it means to keep holy the Lord's Day. The Lord's Day is the day of the resurrection. And we look at it that way from the Christian perspective, that Sunday is the Lord's Day. It is the day upon which Lord and Savior Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And so that day becomes holy when we participate in it, when we celebrate the Mass, when we pray, when we try to focus ourselves on those things that matter most, our families, our friends, those sorts of things that focus us on the activity of God and make us aware of our relationship with God.
I would say, too, that you want to make it holy. Would it really be a terrific imposition if you would spend a short amount of time on Sunday reading something related to the church, even if it's something you grabbed at the back of the literature rack on the way out the door, as opposed to doing the same stuff you do every other day? That would be part of having no other gods besides you, is it?
Yeah.
Spend some time on your own personal inner life. You deserve it.
And that is so true. Spend some time with God. Because again, remember, those first three commandments focus us on our relationship with God. I am the Lord your God. Have no other gods but me. Keep my name holy and keep my day holy by spending time with me, by praying, by remembering my existence and my priority in your life.
In the past, at least 15 years, if not more, there has been a vast increase of places for doing perpetual adoration or adoration on a schedule throughout the Diocese of La Crosse. And if you want to get away from the troubles of the world for an hour or half an hour, look up an adoration chapel in your area. Go just sit in there. Maybe bring one of those little brochures with you or whatever.
Yeah.
If you want to calm your mind and put aside all the other stuff that's going on in the world, and there's so much of it, there's a real good place to go.
So true. So true.
Now, here's one that sounds so simple, and yet I honestly don't even know where to begin unpacking it. Honor your father and your mother.
Yes. This one kind of comes in there and it creeps up between keeping the Lord's Day and not killing somebody. But it's there precisely because of the fact that you're honoring your father and your mother. You're having some sort of relationship with those who brought you life, those who participated with God to bring you to birth. Those are beautiful things. But it's not just the act of remembering them and honoring them. It's a matter of recognizing father and mother as those who have primary space. Remember, the first three commandments deal with our relationship with God. The second seven then begin with our relationship with one another. And they start with our parents. So it starts with not just being nice to everybody and being a kind person, all that sort of thing. It's remembering your mother and your father, remembering those who brought you to life, remember those whom God used to create you. And that whole sense, I mean, it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper as we want to go into the whole mystery of parenting.
Yeah, the mystery of parenting is good. You know, also, I think it would be appropriate in that particular commandment to suggest that try to understand that, especially if you were the first child, they make mistakes. I mean, by the time the third one comes along, you know, like the first kid is, oh my gosh, the baby's walking in the grass. You know, oh no.
Absolutely.
The third one is, let him crawl.
That's right.
I'm very cognizant of the fact that my parents, I was an only child. My mother was unable to have another child after I was born. She had a miscarriage before me. I was the only one that was going to be. They made mistakes in upbringing, and, you know, it wasn't their fault. I mean, heck, there's very few instruction manuals that come
along.
That's
true.
And so cut your parents some slack.
Please. Please, please, please.
Yeah, I'm sure they look at sometimes how they raised you, and they probably have some regrets on their part saying, gee, I wish I had done this, or gee, I wish I had done that, or, you know. But in many cases, I know it was in my case, and certainly in my wife's case, the parents were not super rich when I was a little kid. They were never super rich, for that matter. They scrimped and they saved to try to keep me happy and healthy and all that stuff. And the same with the kids in my wife's family. And most of the time when you're a kid, you may not even realize how much stuff they did for you and what they did without for you.
Well, that's true. And that's the very first place to start what Jesus labels as the first great commandment. Love God with your whole heart, your whole soul, and your whole mind, and then love your neighbor as you love yourself. And they say in that passage of scripture, on these is the whole law based, and everything that comes along with it. So, but you start with loving your neighbor by loving your parents, starting right with the people who are right there, the ones who gave you life.
Yeah, that's very good. Now, number five is a big one. You shall not kill. And boy, those four words have probably had more volumes written about them than many of the other commandments, because it's a very immediate time you say that, people come up with the, but what about it? But what about war? What about a burglar?
Exactly.
What about armed robbery?
Exactly.
What about, I guess basically what I would, you know, my totally secular guess is that you shouldn't be looking forward to it.
Yeah. The whole sense of understanding, trying to figure out how to get around defining kill. The whole sense of it is taking another's life. And so we get later on into taking another's reputation, but stopping the life of another human being, that in scripture is the worst possible thing that could happen. that you would take another's life, that you would stop them from being. That really does call you to some very serious thought and some very thought-provoking action.
It also can tie in with Jesus talking about forgiving people, which is really tough. We had this young guy in Highland Park who just shot all these people, and perhaps they're saying may have had thoughts of coming to Madison, which was frightening. And you know, take one look at the guy, and he's got like the salad bar tattooed to the side of his face. And he looks bizarre, and he's been called a monster. And what he did was indeed monstrous. There's no doubt about it. But you have to wonder what happened. Where did he go off the rails?
That's the truth, and that's exactly what we try to go through. The Ten Commandments always involve an action, because sin always involves action. You have to decide that you're going to really want to do it. George Carlin, for as all craziness that George Carlin could come up with, you know, when he talks about sin on some of his albums, he talks about you gotta wanna. The whole idea of your thought to action, head to hand, you know, the whole thing. You think about it, you know it's wrong, and you do it anyway. That is it. And so the idea of killing is not just a matter of, oh, thinking about it, you know, I wish you were dead, but I'm going to make you dead. I'm going to do this action. And that's where you start to understand sin a little bit more. And that's why it's, you know, it's the first deadly sin, murder, you know, committing someone, you know, making someone die, you know, is precisely it. And it's where we start with Adam and Eve's sons, you know, and all these different sorts of things that happen, Cain and Abel, you know, the whole idea of actually killing someone.
He did seem to have a gotta-wanna going on.
That's it.
And there will be volumes and volumes written in psychological journals about where did this come from? What was the genesis of this kid's brain
exactly
to do this?
Yeah.
But I strongly suspect he'll be put away for the rest of his life.
Absolutely. You know. Yeah.
And that brings to mind my thoughts about, you know, having seen the made-for-TV movie many, many years ago, The Scarlet and the Black.
Yes.
You know, this Catholic, was he a cardinal or was he a bishop?
He was a cardinal, guy, yeah.
He was a cardinal. He was hounded by this despicable Nazi Gestapo guy who no doubt was responsible for all kinds of deaths. And after the guy was put away for the rest of his life for crimes against humanity, we're talking big time.
Yes.
The cardinal went to see him, and they'd never let the guy out of prison. You know, he wasn't given a pass to go home on the weekends. Nothing like that ever happened. But eventually he understood where he had sinned, and as a matter of fact, he became Catholic. And I remember watching that movie back in like 1982. It was it's still in the you can buy copies in Catholic bookstores. I turned to my wife and I said, "If that isn't total victory over evil, I don't know what is."
And that's exactly right. It is total victory when you kind of understand it in Jesus's action. You have the absolute, total, perfect goodness coming to deal with the absolute misery and defilement of human life. And that, of course, then we take it in even more deeply, the actual goodness of Jesus against the absolute evil of the devil. And Jesus overcomes that evil because the devil has nothing else on his mind than to destroy good, to destroy God. And it is just that whole sense of us not understanding or not even attempting to understand the fact that God is good, and that no matter what we do, however crazy we are, God's never going to stop loving us. And that's always calling us to our senses. So the idea of I am the Lord your God, you have no other gods but me, is so absolutely true, because there are so many opportunities to have so many other gods, and to not choose them, to not want them is the whole thing. I mean, the commandments continually call us and call our attention. And that's why I urge people to read the Catechism of the Church, because there are so many points there that have been clarified for us in terms of how we are to live our lives. What is our relationship with God? First three commandments. What's our relationship with our brothers and sisters in the human race? The seven commandments who follow afterwards. And it's not easy, but it's not rocket science either. You know, when you come right down to it, I love God and I choose God. And that whole sense of making choices, that's where the moral order comes right smack dab in the middle of our lives.
And there is a chance that if someone takes the time with this kid over the years,
yes,
now, we're not talking not three weeks from now, that maybe at some point in his life, he will realize the magnitude of what he did and where he went wrong and how he totally regrets doing it. And maybe we'll make some opportunity. Maybe it would be a manuscript or a book or talking on recordings or something to basically explain his descent into the hell that he was in and the hell he created and how he got back out of it.
I'm
hoping that happens
someday. So sad.
Yeah, it is. It's very hard to talk about this right now when most people commenting online are just saying, kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why bother with all of this, you know, stuff that we have to go through? There are so many people, those immediately touched by this cataclysm, this difficulty, this sin, and they who have been touched by it, they can, you know, be undone by just simply saying, oh, just kill them. But aren't we just touched by those people who have been touched by this this old difficulty, this sadness, this sin, when they say, I forgive him. My child has been killed. My parents have been killed. Terrible things have happened. But I choose to forgive this person. Wow. I find that very, very, consuming.
There was a series of photographs done by a press photographer in the Middle East. This guy was a Middle Eastern photographer. And these two 20-something-year-olds got in a fight at a bar, and the one guy stabbed the guy and killed him. And he was sentenced to death, publicly hung. That was his sentence. And this guy went to photograph this guy being publicly hung for murder. And the mother of the guy who did the stabbing was there to watch. And the mother of the kid who was killed was there to watch also. And they bring this guy out, and he is crying, and he is terrified. And they put a thing around his eyes so he can't see. And they put the rope around his neck, and they put him up on the scaffold. And then in the next picture, the mother of the child who was killed, the young man who was killed, tells him to stop. And she goes up, and they take the cover off the guy's face. She slaps him good and hard, and takes the noose off. And then she goes and she embraces the mother of him. And they had the law in that particular law of their country and their religion that if she forgives him, he doesn't die.
Wow.
It was incredible. The photographs, you know, you could just see these two mothers, one who has lost her son and the one who was about to lose her son, embracing. Great stuff. Just sometimes photojournalism can do so much. It's just great. So this is all amplification on four words. Thou shalt not kill.
Yes.
It's kind of amazing.
Yes.
Okay, number six. This gets into lots of different things. You shall not commit adultery.
Yep. Now, very clearly, what that is a violation of the great relationship. There is a relationship between a man and a woman. And once that relationship is consummated in marriage, then to violate that relationship, strictly speaking, is adultery. Now, when we start looking at it, we go way, 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 way out. We go from here to the moon with rationalizations about what it means, what the sixth commandment means. And the sixth commandment, we boil it down to simplicity, that it's just, it has to do with purity. And it has to do with, you know, what goes on between a man and a woman in terms of marriage, the commitment that goes beyond anything that we could understand. And then the whole idea of self-gratification, self-justification, all the different sorts of things that say, I want this, therefore I should have it, and I want it. And so therefore, I'm going to go ahead and take advantage. So the objectification of humanity, the objectification of man and woman, the objectification of man and man, woman and woman, all these different sorts of things go so much deeper than our understanding with regard to becoming part of relationships. And this whole thing, it leads us into all sorts of things. So many branches of psychology deal with the necessity of being with another person, the depth of understanding of what it means to be with another person. When God says it is not good that the man should be alone, to ponder that sentence in the scriptures is to really get into what it means for people to need one another. I love you because I need you, or I need you because I love you. There's so much to think about in terms of thinking about those ideas to really create a relationship and to say, I will live with you, I will love you, I will be present, I will love you and honor you all the days of my life. There's just so much there. So when you get into the sixth commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, the whole sense of breaking that relationship, sundering that bond, lying, you know, just deceiving one another by going out and just having your way with someone else so that you are going to be fulfilled, creates some very, very difficult kinds of things for us in terms of the world in which we live. You know, so everything becomes, and it has become, you know, so clear that we just go ahead and take advantage of anybody we wish. This kid who took advantage of these people, he was not doing anything with them sexually. But when we get into understanding the whole dynamic of misusing another human being, brings us into a little bit more closer into the sixth commandment. You can understand why these commandments are placed where they are, because they lead right into the next idea that is being presented. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not break the relationship that exists between a man and a woman. That whole sentence is right there.
Yeah, and I've seen, you know, I've known some people in my life who one of their parents got involved with somebody else, and it breaks the children too.
Yes.
Very strongly. So I don't think it's one of those things that it can happen and really hard to repair the damage. I don't think it's impossible, but really hard to repair. The damage.
Yeah. Oh, it's very.
I had great advice long before I was married. I wasn't anything. I was just in the Army at 18. And of course, these guys in the Army are always talking about carousing with women. And one guy who was older, he was like 20. He looked at me. I was 18, you know, wet behind the ears. And all he said was, don't rush into it like your first beer.
Wow.
That's really good. I've kept that advice all my life.
Yeah.
Dora, there's a lot. Boy, if you are suddenly in a marriage and there's somebody that you think is really cool to have some kind of a fling with, don't rush into it like your first beer.
No. And don't treat it as though it's something that you know, is your first beer, you know? Don't
treat it's serious
stuff. You know, with such a cavalier attitude, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there are so many things that we have to seriously think about that we don't typically think about, and we've not been taught. And I've gone over this with so many people. I've been misquoted over and over again because some priests have used my own words against me, that we haven't really centered ourselves. We haven't taught enough. And we've come out of Second Vatican Council, and we've just kind of haven't gone back to Catholic school. We haven't gone back to our thoughts, to our catechism, to our understanding of the scriptures, all these various things that have taught us over the years, and we're just out there. And I get so sad over that sometimes, that the church hasn't taught so many things that people need to have. And by the same understanding, people haven't listened to what they need to hear from the church.
This is what I've been feeling lately, that, you know, here I am after all these years, even having majored in the various religions of the world and all this stuff, here I am watching what's going on in the United States and the world today, and I'm going, you know, if they would just spend more time with these basic teachings that were in the New Testament and the Ten Commandments, you know, no one ever said this stuff was easy.
Yeah.
But by golly, it has got such truth to it that you can ground yourself in. And you don't, you know, I don't know if it's our delivery. We sound too self-righteous. I don't think most priests I've talked to have never sounded that way. But this is basic truth. You know, it's kind of like, I thought we would do a show on some of the other gospel things of Jesus. And I went, wait a minute, let's talk about the Ten Commandments, because this is going to keep you busy for the rest of the week.
Yes. Yeah. At least. And that's so true. And that is precisely right. That there should be a way of trying to think about, how do I love God and how do I love others? Yeah. That's what the scripture is all about. The love of God and the love of neighbor.
And we'll probably at some other show, you know, do more of the New Testament stuff that that we can fill a whole show with. You know, I'll tell you the other one. This, again, sounds so simple. You shall not steal. Wow, that could be everything from pirating a movie to recently at some graveyard. I don't know if it was in our area or not. People brought little figurines and little things. Like one guy's daughter had died, and she was really fond of turtles, and they put a little ceramic turtle by her grave. People stole it.
Yeah.
To sell it on eBay or to you know. And people who steal people's Christmas ornaments off their front lawns.
Uh-huh.
How can you enjoy the beauty of Christmas lights celebrating the birth of Christ and all that means with lights you stole from somebody else off their front lawn?
Because you think you deserve it.
I see.
You deserve it more than they do. You can take it because they shouldn't have that. There are so many different kinds of ways of looking at things. When we start examining things, this would be better for me than for you. You really don't understand how valuable this is. You don't understand how much I need this more than you do. And I mean, it just takes us through so many crazy kinds of understandings about the fact that you have this, I should have it. I mean, it is a matter of, I deserve this more than you should have it. You know, it's just so crazy.
Well, it's also, it gets back to that having no other gods beside me. There's this thing that flows through so many religions. It's mentioned in different ways of not being basically so attached to your stuff. And if you are so attached to material stuff that you would steal it from somebody else, then there's something wrong with you. That you need to figure out, is it going to make you happy to own this thing that you stole?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. For a minute or two,
And there are people who do shoplift. There's people who get crazy. They steal stuff for the thrill of doing it, and they have it in their house in the box. And then there, one lady was found with, I don't know how many thousands of dollars of things that she, porch pirates who steal stuff off porches.
Yeah.
From, you know, she went to jail. And she's like, but I didn't mean it. Well, you know, you've got $20,000 worth of merchandise, you know, in your basement. Some of the boxes have never even been opened. What are you doing?
Yeah.
It gets crazy. Yeah. That's another thing you could spend more time on, because you also can steal other people's opportunities and other people's advantages and all kinds of things that go on. But another one. Anyway, I love this one. You shall not bear false witness. When you're after you're done, I have a story to tell you real quick.
And that's and this is our understanding of not only taking things that don't belong to us, things, but now you're talking about people's reputations. This is the place where you start swearing a false oath against another human being. You lie. This is where authentic perjury comes in. You know, where you actually are doing something that is not only contrary to having things, but it is contrary to, you know, someone's reputation, someone's good name. Just to lie, to take something that isn't yours and someone's good name. And that is just, oh, there's so many ways you can go there. So go there, Jack.
Yeah, well, you know, you can also include disinformation and misinformation that's deliberate. You're going to love this. This is from the Associated Press. I'll try to read this as quickly as I can. Pope Francis did not say that God had told him to revise the Ten Commandments, as was claimed in a widely shared story. Francis never made the purported comments and has not changed or added to the Ten Commandments. He has no authority to do so. The story said Francis made the announcement in 2015 in Ecuador during the beginning of a three-nation South American tour. It said Francis revised the biblical teaching to cover children raised by same-sex parents and remove prohibitions on adultery. It said Francis had added a new commandment to forbid genetic engineering and self-glorification and said the Vatican was having a new set of commandments etched into marble. You know, he did not do any of these things whatsoever, but this one... The story appeared on a site called Real News Right Now, which is now listed on MediaWatch as a hoax site. The purported author, who they claimed to be an investigative journalist, they claim had won awards that don't exist, including the Oscar Mayer Award for Journalistic Excellence.
I like that.
It's a little gold hot dog, you know, on a pedestal.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, this is now there was no harm done to the Pope by this specifically.
Certainly not.
But I'm sure there were some people who got very upset,
right?
And may have you know, what the heck with the Catholic Church if they're going to do that, So there was harm done. Now, Bishop, these last two, they almost seem slightly repetitive when you first look at them. Number nine is, and I'm going to read these together. Number nine is, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Number 10 is, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. Now, isn't that a little like the adultery and a little like the stealing?
Yes. And they are, and then they come right in there, but enough to make us understand. And if any other time we look backwards and we say, okay, in history, this made some sense. Wife was property, property was property, and everything was very, very valuable. And nowadays, when we look at the whole idea of, I'm going to take this because it's mine, I want it. And this becomes so clear. This is a clarification, perhaps, of what we've just heard in terms of stealing and adultery. So now it becomes even more clear that we make ourselves more important than others. We make ourselves more important, more significant. We have the right, we have the authority to choose to steal, to make people's lives miserable, whatever it may be. The elements of these commandments now take us even more deeply into the idea of, I can take this, it's mine, it doesn't matter. You don't matter. I can take whatever I want from you because it doesn't matter. You are insignificant.
There's also this concept, the word coveting is very interesting. I always think of Ebenezer Scrooge, the grasping, covetous old sinner.
Yes.
But I'm also reminded, when you think about coveting, of the story about the workers in the field. The ones who come late get paid the same amount of money, and the guys who have been working all day are angry. They're kind of coveting that these guys, in their minds, got something easier than they got.
Yeah.
But basically the concept of, why are you doing that? In Minnesota, they were going to think about giving away some bonus pay to people who were working overtime during the virus, worst times.
Yes.
And people who didn't qualify were going, well, why should they get that? That's coveting.
That's right. Exactly.
You should be happy. You should be happy for what you got, and you should be happy for what they're getting. Don't say, nah, you know, these nurses and these doctors and these orderlies and these people stocking the food shelves and the ambulance drivers, they've been going crazy.
When you go into all of these things, when you go into the Ten Commandments, you go into the seven deadly sins quite deeply. And this is it. This is jealousy at its best. Coveting is jealousy, envy, all of those different things. And, you know, laziness, I'm not going to work for this myself, but I'll just take what someone else has. And it just, you know, so never get lost with the numbers in the scriptures. You know, Ten Commandments, seven deadly sins, all these different sorts of things. These are the things that continually bear down on humanity to help us understand that the devil is very much at work and is trying to trouble us in so many ways about how we are supposed to, how we as human beings can exalt ourselves to the heavens and forget all about the one who lives there.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I really appreciate you taking the time this hour to work on these things, because I'm sincerely hoping, and I'm speaking for myself as well, not just everybody who's listening, that I hope that all of us take some time to listen and think about these things.
Yes.
And maybe you'll feel better about yourself, your place in the world. And if more people do this, the world will become a better place.
Absolutely.
It's just the way it is. And, you know, like I say, the older I get, the smarter I think that the Bible gets. And that's really pretty, that's, boy, you're talking about the major Jack stupid statement of the century. But no, seriously, you read this stuff all your life, and then you see things going on all around the world and all around your city and everywhere else, and murders and killings and shootings and mayhem. And you look back and you say, wait a minute, if they would just do it this way.
Yeah.
It's
so amazing, isn't it? Yeah, and I don't see it happening anytime soon. I see people getting more and more grubby, you know, in terms of how wonderful they think they are, and how in fact they are losing ground fast.
Yeah, they are. And thank God we've got new priests and new deacons and people of goodwill who keep out there, spreading the word out. All they got to do is just get their attention and say, look, what does this say here? Think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I, it can happen. And I'm not saying that everybody is out shooting up parades like this kid did. But everybody can be a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we would just stop making ourselves God and trying to follow the one who is God. Yeah. And I mean, I think sometimes that's where it gets a little crazy, because we think that we know so much more than God, or we are so much better than God. And when we talk about that, that's when we sound self-righteous and, you know, holier than thou and all this sort of stuff. And it gets real scary for us.
See, the good thing is, for my benefit, to be working on this show every week and talking to all these people who are doing good. You know, I just had on Father Woody talking about, you know, helping out all the missions and all these things. When you see the results of following these things we're talking about, it becomes much more clear that it is a great way to live.
Yes.
And so I guess we're going to have to leave it at that. But Bishop, can you leave us with a prayer and a blessing for all those out there who are trying to find their way through the world?
Almighty and merciful God, we thank you for helping us to understand that you lead us always beyond ourselves. Sending Jesus among us shows us so clearly to ourselves who we are supposed to be, how we are supposed to be. Jesus continues to manifest himself and helps us to love you, Father, more and more than we could ever imagine. Almighty and good God, please open our minds and our hearts to the beauty of your wisdom, to the simplicity of your love, and to the great gifts that you give us in spite of ourselves. We ask for this wisdom in the name of Jesus, who is your Son and Mary's, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you, Bishop. We'll talk to you again as soon as we possibly can.
God bless you, Jack. Thank you very much. Pardon, my voice is going out on me, and everything else is happening over here.
You sound fine. Don't worry about it. The words stand on their own beautifully.
God bless you, Bishop.
We'll talk to you again.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Bishop. I think this particular show is a good example of one of the many ways that the Diocese of La Crosse reaches out to people in the pews and people who can't get to the pews with information to brighten your day, information to help, information to inspire. We have, of course, the video mass, which is extremely popular. Lots of priests have homilies online. There's all kinds of information at the Diocese of La Crosse website, including some of the classes you can take for free that can be really, really wonderful things for you to kind of learn new things about your faith. This particular show was one of these ones that I thought was kind of like the one the bishop did on prayer life, ones that are keepers, that maybe every once in a while we'll do a slightly edited version of it to remind people that there are things out there that can help you live a better life that don't cost you a lot of money and are not so much easy to do, but challenging to do, but again, can really pay off well. But speaking of not costing you money, yeah, here comes the pitch, Jack. These things do cost us money. Now, this show, not a tremendous amount. We're very, very frugal. However, there are expenses involved. And so I would suggest that when the bishop's annual appeal comes around, you remember this particular show and all the other shows we have, and maybe put a little money in there that you think maybe will help us out. And if at any other time you want to thank our bishop for taking time out from his busy schedule, plus all the other people that come on who are also very, very busy, you can also mail a check to the Diocese of La Crosse or go online and donate and just do what they call a targeted donation, saying, here, this is to help out with the expenses of connecting the Diocese radio show. Every cent is carefully used. We watch every little bit. We really try not to break the budget. And seriously, after 10 years, it's been a very effective thing. One of the many, many aspects of the way that the Diocese of La Crosse tries to reach out to you wherever you happen to be. So I say thank you to our bishop and all the guests who come on, and of course you, listening to this show, and any of you who choose to support us, again, our deepest appreciation for supporting the show. Jack Socha here with you on Connecting the Diocese, hoping you are enjoying this show. A lot of things to reflect upon this week, and I am reminded of some family stories, not just my family, but my wife's family. My wife's family was half Finnish immigrant and half Danish immigrant. And on the Danish side was her father, who was a very, very happy man. He also, in his young days, played in a jazz combo, by the way, and I have his saxophone, which I hope to someday restore and once again try to learn to play. Good luck on that, Jack. They had a saying that there were so-called the gloomy Danes and the happy Danes, and it was somewhat geographic, and how real this was, I don't really know, but he was definitely one of the happy Danes, and it was a delight to know him. On my family, I had half the side was Scottish and half the side was Polish. Actually, the Polish side was in a kind of a strange part of the world that was constantly being taken by different countries, as is going on right now. And so they tended to be, if you want to call them, the gloomy people. And they certainly did exhibit that kind of feeling. They had a lot of negative thoughts about other races and all kinds of things, which I was kind of startled by. The Scottish side was much more easygoing. Both sides of the family came from out of the Depression, so there was really no reason why one was happy and the other wasn't. My mother was on the happy side, and she was the kind of mom that all the kids in the neighborhood liked. They liked to hang out at the house because she made it fun. One summer, right about this time, and I don't know who got this idea, the kids wanted to do a Christmas in July party. And my mother said, okay. And you have to understand, this little street we lived on was pretty tight. I mean, we had people watching each other all the time. It was very much like a small town. And in the middle of July, my mother goes up into the extremely hot attic of our house and brings down an artificial Christmas tree we had stuck up there and some tinsel and lights. And we had an enclosed porch, but highly visible because there were lots of windows on it. And she strings up this tinsel and these lights, and she puts up the artificial Christmas tree. And we got the record player out and the Christmas carols and, you know, things like this. And these kids all came over, and we had a Christmas in July party. And I often wonder what the neighbors thought. Oh, there's crazy Mrs. Socha. But the kids loved it. I was actually thinking about doing it, but I think maybe time is not going to permit this year, of doing a Christmas in July radio show. Because we are quite a long ways away from Christmas, no matter which direction you look. But there's no reason not to look and celebrate the good news. So what I'm going to leave you with is a recording from a musical version of the story of Ebenezer Scrooge. This one was done recently. It was just done for the audio, not a video. And incidentally, the man who you're going to be hearing singing played the holographic doctor on the Star Trek TV show. Yeah, this is Ebenezer Scrooge finally realizing that things can be okay if he just becomes a decent person. And he likes life. And one of the key lines he says is, "Till I die, life and I will both try to be better somehow." It's kind of interesting that this particular production of music from the musical and from the movie Scrooge came out a couple of years ago. It did not do particularly well. It's a little different pace. People were used to the full orchestration and the massed choruses and all this stuff. And yet I was noticing over the past year or so, if you go on to YouTube, you find more and more people independently recording a version of the song. I like life. Life likes me. Life and I fairly fully agree. I think there's something to it that people just want to be happy. They want to be good. They want to do good. They celebrate when good things happen, like several times in the past several weeks when some 16-year-old boys have rescued people from drowning. We're talking about, oh my gosh, that car went in the water. And boom, one case, one young kid saved two young ladies, and the policeman who was trying to save them. Remarkable stuff. There's remarkable stuff. There's goodness going on all around us every single day. It doesn't always make headlines, but you can find it by looking around hard enough. There's just plenty of good things going on. And so, if you want to sing along, you can do that. The words are actually on the screen if you go to the YouTube version. I like life. Life likes me. Life and I fairly fully agree. And oh yes, you don't have to be a superhero and rescue people drowning from a car to really do good. Just a simple hello and a smile, how are you doing, and listening to somebody who maybe needs to have someone hear what they have to say can be an heroic thing as well. Such little things like that. Perhaps giving a little bit of money to a charity or donating some things to a thrift store or just helping a neighbor in need. Keeping your eyes open and seeing how you can be of some small help can make a huge difference in someone else's life. So, with Christmas in July in my heart, and my mother, if she was here, would probably say, okay, enjoy the rest of the week, and I'm going to wish you a Merry Christmas. We can celebrate it all year long. See you next week.
I like life. Life likes me, life and I fairly fully agree. Life is fine, life is good, especially mine, which is just as it should be. I like pouring the wine, and why not? Life's a pleasure that I deny not. I like life here and now. Life and I made a mutual vow. Till I die, life and I will both try to be better somehow. And if life were a woman, she would be my wife. Why? Because I like life. Life. likes me. I make life a perpetual spree, eating food, drinking wine, thinking who'd like the privilege to dine me. I like drinking the drink I'm drinking. I like thinking the thoughts I'm thinking. Shh, I like songs, I like dance. I hear music and I'm in a trance. Tra-la-la, ooh-pa-pa. Chances are I shall get up and prance. Where there's music and laughter, happiness is rife. Why? Because I like life.